Well, hey there, friend. How you guys feeling? Me? Well, I'd complain, but who would listen? Whoa, boy. Social distancing, remember? No one ever tested if gators can get this shit. You want to be the first? Come on in, friend. Don't worry, I'm pretty sure you can't get it through the internet. Well, this'll help, I'm sure. Tastes like it's been up someone's ass. So does this, but I think it always kinda did. Alright, well, smoke 'em if you've got 'em and drink those glasses to the bottom. Cause old Drew Blood has COVID. And the telltale.
Hey, you're listening to the standard edition of this program. To get instant access to ad-free versions of all our episodes and hundreds of tales from our audio archives dating back to 2012, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com and click Patrons in the upper menu. Sign up today. It's a great way to show your support, and you'll get a whole lot for it. And authors, send your scary stories to DrewBloodHorror@gmail.com. If you're selected, you'll get that full treatment. Shit.
Far be it from me to call out of work on a night like this. Tonight we're headed up to Manhattan with our pal Aaron Fleck for a little New York noir. So without further delay, I give you that little joint down on West 34th.
It all started with me playing my horn most nights down at Vinny's in the village. It was just up the street from a couple of the bigger joints featuring the likes of Goodman, Basie, and Dorsey, you know. Those cats. And dames like Billy and Ella, showing them what for. It was an okay gig, I suppose, playing for drinks and tips and the hopes of meeting some of the classier acts in town. And maybe swinging a sit-down where I could maybe show them what I could do with the horn. Then I'd be right up there with the big boys and smooth sailing to a headliner. Maybe even become the next Harry James. Well, fellas gotta dream big, you know. Some nights there'd be big tips if the Dolls were singing, enough to keep me in the 50-cent flop where I hung my hat, and maybe a few clams left over for reefer now and then. Ah, jeez, where's my manners? Name's Johnny Sekla, and no H in Johnny. Ma must have thought she was paying by the letter and figured she'd save a bit in the long run on the clipped moniker. I'm an ordinary Joe, I guess, who just happens to play the horn like old man Gabriel himself. I know it, and the tips show it. But I just never got that big break. Never ran with the right crowd, you could say. So there I was, staying afloat mostly, even if my aft end was taken on water. Now, before we go any further, I gotta tell you about Mr. Mike. See, Mr. Mike was the local tough guy. A big man in every sense of the word. Over 6 feet and, well, Mr. Mike was a man of substantial proportion, if you get my drift. Always wore a crisp white suit, spotless like it just came out of the cleaners, and a white fedora and spats. Where he ever found that getup is anybody's guess. Probably had it made up special over in Jersey someplace. He had his fingers in all the joints and even the small fry grocery stores. Now, I'm not saying he ran the big classy clubs. I heard tell those guys were all fixed up with the boys in Brooklyn, if yous know what I mean. No, Mr. Mike was a local boy born and bred, so they say. And some older guys even claim they remember him from school. But I'm not so sure. But now he was rich as Midas himself. Kept a mansion on Fifth Avenue up in the 100 someplace with all the trimmings. And a big silver shadow and driver done up like Jeeves to sport him around. Being seen and gathering up the take. He always had two guys with him lurking in his wake like junkyard dogs that didn't see three squares with any regularity. Needless to say, nobody was messing around with Mr. Mike. On the other hand, and it's always about the other hand, ain't it? Mr. Mike was the kind of guy who could make all a fella's dreams come true. Long as he played ball his way and did whatever little favors the big guy wanted done, just to show your gratitude. That's what he always said. It was just that, see? Johnny Sekler wanted no part of any of it. He'd make it his way, or he'd fail with the best of them and never owe nobody nothing. So things were going along as they do. The Three Commons were singing backup for us that one summer. Three class dames, all named Common, or so that was the story. It was a good gimmick and made for a nice marquee out front. I never knew this for the longest time, but the girls were run by Mr. Mike. I never figured Vinny was in cahoots with the likes of him, but then if he puts the finger on you and you don't want to get torched some night, I guess you pretty much gotta play ball. I suppose I just turned a blind eye, didn't want to know nothing, until it was too damn late. My buddy Skitch, who beat the tubs at Vinny's, and I were gonna head up to Harlem this one night to catch his twin brother Ray on tenor sax at the Peacock Club. I was waiting at the bar, and the kid was taking his sweet time getting into his duds, and it was already late, so I went and pounded on the door. When I got no answer, I yelled for him, and yelled again, and then kicked the door in. There was Skitch on the floor, the needle still in his arm and a damn grin on his face. He was gone. Just like that, the kid was gone. I wanted to punch the little bastard in the mug real bad, but instead, all I could do was sit there on the floor and hold him, and bawl like a baby. Skitch had been like my kid brother, and now he was gone. The guys got me out of there and cleaned up and called the ambulance. They knew it was too late for Skitch, but you had to try. Then I made my way up to the Peacock in a haze and gave Ray the news. He staggered to a chair and fell into it. Thanked me for coming and told me to beat it. He knew I wasn't to blame. I never touched that shit, but he had to make sense of things his own way. I kind of linked those two things as some kind of gateway to what was to come. Finding out Vinny was glad handling Mr. Mike, and then the kid's death. So it was no real surprise when a couple of days after the funeral, Vinny called me down to the club a few hours early. I walked in, and there's Vinny and Mr. Mike laughing like old pals, half a dozen empties on the table between them. They called me over, I sat down, and just like that, Vinny leaves. I was still not thinking square from all that had happened, and maybe I only half understood the offer to move uptown a few blocks and start a real paying gig with Fatty Arquette and his band at Cafe Rula Lulu on Central Park West, a real swank address I'd never even seen the insides of before. Part of me must have said yes, because a week later, I was setting up at Lulu, watching the dames with the floor show fluttering around like cockatoos in their sequins and big feather fanfans. Lulu was a swell joint, a great lit-up marquee out front, a real stage, and an orchestra pit with Lulu's written in fancy script on the front of our music stands. Sexy but respectable costumes for the girls, the whole bit. And a dance floor where 100 couples could mop up the dust with their twinkle toes. And as many tables with white tablecloths. The whole class act. You bet I was glad for the gig. I told myself, as you do of course, that it was just a job. A chance. That big break I knew I had coming to me one day. And that Johnny Sekler's ship had finally glided in the port. I was there to play the horn and get paid and go home. That was it. No favors, no frills, nothing but the music. Yeah, I told myself that bedtime story like you do when you know somehow that you're climbing in the bed with the devil and he was gonna ride you hard till he was through with you before dumping you in an alley somewhere. But it started out okay. Lulu was a gas. She must have been a real looker in her day. And wasn't so bad now when she was pushing 50. She mommed everybody, the girls, musicians, regulars, everybody. But she turned cold as an iceberg on two occasions. Whenever some old soak tried to get smart and started playing grab ass with one of the girls in the show, and then on those rare but all too memorable times when Mr. Mike strolled in to take a look around and collect what Lulu owed him. I wondered how she'd gotten mixed up with the guy, knowing she was a real stand-up gal every day of the week and twice on Sundays. Whatever barrel Mr. Mike had Lulu over was a mean one, and none of her doing. Just like me. Yeah, and I'd walked in with my eyes wide open. As I say, everything was going along okay, I guess, and then this new dame showed up out of the blue, and Lulu said she was the new headliner. We all looked at each other, wondering what had happened to Lulu's sister Mandy, who had been there forever, singing second only to the big names when we could get them. All Lulu ever said was Mandy had gone back home to look after the mother. I never bought that yarn. Nobody did. I figured Mr. Mike had put the squeeze on her in favor of this new broad, and Lulu had to just put up. But then there was Dolores, that new singer and hoofer. One look at Dolores and I knew she was trouble, big time. But I was smitten the minute I laid eyes on her. Knocked off my feet, 6 feet under with no regrets. She had dark hair done up in waves and crimps on top of her head, and she was curvy in all the right places. She took one look at me and smiled, and I knew just where we was headed. Now, I was never one of those dreamboat kind of guys. I was shorter than some, but no jockey by a long shot. Okay in the mug, sandy blonde hair and enough of it to cover everything that needed covering, and a goatee that some of the cats were sporting these days, and I liked what I saw in the mirror well enough. So I figured me and Dolores were a good match, and the rest was history, but what a history. See, although I couldn't take my eyes off her, I knew Dolores was off limits. Figured she was Mr. Mike's gal. Or at the very least, I'd be a sucker to mess with any of his people without a specific invite, and maybe even then. So I kept a real wide orbit between me and the girl while worshipping from afar. We had just finished the Christmas Eve show, the last matinee before putting the big holiday review to bed and closing for the week. Some of the kids from the show and I ran down to the village to kick up our heels and see what old Vinny was up to these days. I walk in, and right away I see Dolores and Mr. Mike at a table with a couple of other cats I'd seen around before. I ignored them and went and got us a table and ordered drinks, slapped Vinny on the back and said our happy holidays and all that. But then, of course, I'm spotted.
Hey, Kay, get over here. What are you playing such a cold fish for? Say hi to Dolores and meet some friends of mine,
Mr. Mike bellowed, jerking his thumb towards an empty seat at his table. Just my bum luck. I'd been giving Mr. Mike the slip the whole time I'd been playing at Lulu's, but this was bound to happen sooner or later. I just hoped it'd be over quick and I could slip out of his mitts and get back to my pals and then Amscray for greener pastures. Hey, how's it going, Dolores? I mumbled with a smile and a nod at the other two jokers. Names were hastily exchanged. Mr. Mike whispered something into Dolores' ear, and the next thing I know, she's in my arms and we're caught up in the tide of the dance floor. I shook my head. I hadn't even had a drink, but my head was kind of fuzzy. Maybe it was the nearness of the heat of the woman I'd been mooning over pressed against me, her eyes locked on mine. And what eyes they were. Green like I'd never seen, dark and fluid like deep seawater. I was snared like a fly in the web of those eyes and didn't care if this was my last minute on Earth.
Let's get out of here, Johnny. What do you say, huh? There's a little place I know that's quiet. We can talk. And they got absinthe for the regulars.
She cooed in my ear. We hopped in the cab headed uptown and I felt her hand, electric, soft and warm, her fingers entwined in mine and synced up like there was just one heartbeat between us. I was thinking that we should maybe skip the absinthe, cut through the chase and head straight to her pad. I guess that's what happened because we pulled up in front of a big high-rise address on Fifth Avenue where I figured we were making for another party. But the doorman tipped his hat and said, "Good evening, miss." But I didn't catch the last name. We walked through a vast marble lobby that could probably hold 100 or more, then took the elevator for what seemed like an eternity. Dolores fished a key out of her purse and we were inside in no time. Off came the furs that landed in a heap on a plush round sofa. The high heels were tossed aside and drinks were in hand from a nice bar set up in the corner. This your place? I asked, taking it all in and whistling. The windows were floor to ceiling, and the marble floor was split level with a full grand piano on the riser. Manhattan lay out naked before us like a carpet made of stars.
Yeah, Johnny, you like it?
She purred as we started to slow dance to some crooner whose voice seemed to magically appear out of nowhere. Do I? I croaked. It's first class. You live here alone? I was wondering if some roommate, or worse, some husband might be lurking down the hall. Or maybe Mr. Mike might be the leaseholder on the joint.
Yeah, Johnny, the place belonged to my mother. She's gone, so it's all mine now. But enough of that. Let me show you the bedroom. I've been dying to show you my bedroom,
she said, grabbing a bottle and a couple of glasses from the bar. We slid into a bedroom that was straight out of one of those Town and Country magazines and was bigger than five of my own dump. I didn't have long to take in the sights before she pulled me onto the bed, and then everything went sideways. She was all over me, arms, legs, hot hungry lips, and I swear I melted into her and spread out all over the bed in a flood of limbs and kisses that took me places I never knew existed. I wondered if maybe she'd slip me a Mickey or something, but I wasn't in any condition to do anything about it if she had, so I just lay there, floating in the delight that was her flesh. It seemed to go on like that for hours and hours, the velvet kisses still clinging to me, pouring over me as I faded into the land of Nod, while a flood of images chilled my guts and crawled over my flesh, and I screamed like to wake the dead. I could tell we weren't alone anymore, and I tried to sit up. What the hell? I croaked. I wanted the hell out of there, but like I say, I was gone, and whatever was gonna happen that I should be worrying about, probably already had. The last thing I heard was laughter, but nobody was having any fun. I came to with the sun burning a hole in my forehead, and I groaned, having no damn idea where I was. Then I remembered. I was still at Dolores' pad. Dolores! I bellowed, and then fell back into the pillows. Nobody answered, and then the wave of memories crawled back, and I jumped up and got dressed. There was a note on the nightstand. Hey, baby, we had quite a night. You were still asleep, so I went down to the club. I'll make good with everybody, don't you worry, though. Dolores will be back soon and take real good care of you. Yeah, right, I snarled. Whatever was up with this broad, it wasn't natural, and I wanted no damn part of it. I got a cab back to my digs, showered, and just fell back into some kind of stupor on the bed. When I came to, it was dark, 8 o'clock or so. Through the fog between my ears, I thought everything true. I had to go to the club, no two ways about that. I still had a job to do, bread to win, the rent to pay, even if I did want to put a million miles between me and Dolores. When I got to the club, the band was tuning up without me. I got my horn and took my place, nobody acting the wiser. And then I spotted Dolores up at the bar, chatting up one of the regulars. She spotted me and I grimaced, but she ran up to me all hugs and kisses like nothing was up. I must have felt like a cold fish in her arms when I tried to slither away, but if she noticed, she never let on.
Hey, baby, I'm so glad you're here. I was worried about you, Johnny.
She cooed. Yeah, I'm all right. Just a bit hungover. Let's get to work, I muttered, and she played along. But that was it. That was the end. I was quits with Dolores. Or so I thought. But then, when do we ever get off that easy, you know? It wasn't 3 days later, I swear, when one of the gals from the show came running up to me one afternoon before I even got my coat off, throwing her arms around me, hugging me, and giggling like a kid on her birthday.
Ain't it swell about Dolores, Johnny?
She beamed and gave me another smack on the cheek.
What's up, doll? I asked, tossing my coat onto a chair.
Don't play dumb, Johnny. Everybody knows, and we all think it's just great. We didn't even know you two kids were an item.
Everybody knows what? I asked, truly dumbfounded. And we ain't.
Johnny, you're gonna be a daddy. Dolores told us. Ain't it grand?
She said, then peeled off me and disappeared backstage. I just sat there. No, not possible. I mean, we'd only been friendly that one time and, yeah, sure, it was a hell of a time, but I'm pretty sure things don't work that fast. I wondered what Dolores was up to and figured she was just looking for a daddy for some little junior she had already been percolating. Couldn't blame a gal. No, of course not. But I wasn't him, even if we had ever got off the ground as any kind of pansy-wazzy. But then Dolores shows up and it looks like she's about to pop. She's so big in the family way. It was then everything went haywire and I thought maybe the old ticker was giving out. The room started spinning as if I was on a bender. If I hadn't already been sitting down, I'd have done a nosedive for the floor. Something wasn't right, and it was a whole lot more than Dolores turning up preggers. Then suddenly there was Mr. Mike beaming like a torch and hugging Dolores, kissing her on the forehead, and making all nice while the girls fluttered around like a bunch of hummingbirds. Dolores finally turned and looked at me and winked.
Hey, baby,
she cried, racing up to me and dragging me to my feet like I was a rag doll. All I could do was stand there, something like a grin plastered across my face, but sure as hell not feeling any of it inside. Dolores turns up ready to pop from one day to the next, and nobody says nothing.
Hey, Johnny, you got a call,
Hutch the bartender yelled, holding up the receiver. I was glad for the salvation and squeezed my way over to the phone.
Yeah, this is Johnny,
I yelled into the phone. The guys had started warming up and it was all I could do to hear whoever was calling.
Johnny, it's Ray, Skitch's brother. You remember up at the Peacock.
The voice rang wild with urgency through the line.
Hell yeah, hey Ray, how's it going? I was gonna,
but he cut me off.
Can it, Johnny, you gotta listen to me. Get your hiney up here as soon as you finish up tonight. No ifs and ands, just do it. I should've said something before, but in the shock of losing Skitch, I sorta went crazy for a while. You gotta come, hear me, okay? Tonight, there's something you gotta know about Dolores.
He finished and I could tell he was out of breath.
I know I should've said something. I know, I'm real sorry, pal. Will you come?
Yeah, sure, Ray. Then the line went dead. Something about Dolores. Okay, I could beat a path up to the Peacock, all right. The rest of the night was a blur, and then I was barreling along the 6 Express up to 125th and through the door and headed backstage when Ray grabbed me by the arm and dragged me back out into the street. He didn't say a word, and a few minutes later we were sitting in a booth in Big Daddy's, a hideous little dive in an alley near the Peacock that I wasn't even sure was legal. But what it lacked in other amenities, it was discreet. And you only got in if you was friends of Big Daddy, and they never watered the booze.
Okay, Ray, what gives? I asked, slamming back a highball.
Goddamn, Johnny. I don't know what I was thinking, you know, after Skitch's death and all.
He began, shaking his head and looking around toward the ceiling.
Just spit it out, will ya? What about Dolores?
I demanded, but he just looked at me for too long.
Okay, back when Dolores and Skitch were kind of a hot item,
he started.
Hey. What are you talking about? When was Skitch cozy with her? No, man. No. None of us ever met her before.
I choked out, and it was his turn to cut me off.
Johnny, shut up, man, and listen. You gotta hear me out. This is serious, man.
He tossed back his second jigger of old granddad and wiped his mouth with the back of his hand.
Okay, I said, trying to calm him down, knowing there must be some sort of mix-up.
So sure, Skitch only went out with Dolores a short time, but Johnny, I knew that bird was trouble. But what could I do? My brother was a grown man. He had to keep his own business to himself like we all do. But when he came up here that one night saying he and Dolores was true, man, I breathed a sigh of relief. But I could tell, man, he was scared shitless. Ray wasn't afraid of nothing, and he was scared shitless. I smelled trouble all over that broad from the very start. He told me there was something not right with her, and we was going to check on it the next day. Said he had found some clinic where Dolores stashed her babies. Yeah, you heard that right. Seems Dolores was a regular baby mill. Though you'd never know to look at her. Kept them all stashed in some sort of home up in Poughkeepsie. That's where Sketch went the day before. The day before he killed himself. You and him were coming up here that night, and he was gonna tell me what he found out, I guess. I guess he just couldn't hold out that long.
Ray muttered off and squeezed his eyes, and I knew he was trying to hide the waterworks.
That is if they didn't somehow put the hex on him and murder him.
He added, wide-eyed and looking at me, waiting for me to say something. Okay, I got all that. But I'm telling you, Ray, I never met no Dolores that Sketch was making time with. All I remember was that Rican girl, Maria, and then Shelly for a while. And then the rest of the time, he was just... Ray cut me off by shoving a pitcher across the table in front of me. Then another, and then a third. They were all of me, Ray, Sketch, and some gal. Thing was, I'd never seen the girl before. Never in a million years. And yet there we all were. Grinning like kids in a booth at El Morocco. And a couple of us at the Peacock. Thing was, though, I'd never even been to El Morocco either. And I sure knew I never drank that much, that I'd forget where I'd been. No, sir. So what's this? Who's the dame? I asked. But Ray just looked at me like I'd lost my marbles.
Who's the dame? Johnny, that's Dolores. You know, Mr. Mike's niece. The girl you've been running with.
His mouth was hanging almost as far as mine was. I just stared at the girl in the picture, a curvy little blonde in a tight satin dress. Ray, that ain't Dolores, I snorted, snapping the picture with the nail of my middle finger.
Knock off the shit, Johnny.
But this time I cut him off. This gal is white, Ray. My Dolores, or the Dolores I know, is smooth mocha. And a good head and a half taller than this broad. I'm telling you, man, I've never laid eyes on this girl. But how come we're all in the picture together?
You're finally wising up, ain't you, Johnny? I'm telling you something big is going on and it just ain't right. I'm telling you, she's got the juju on her. I can smell it. But Skitch, he wasn't born with the sense like I was, so by the time he caught on, it was too late. And that's why I had to tell you, Johnny.
But you're still not getting this thing square, Ray. That's not anybody I know. I felt like I was talking to an idiot, the two of us talking in two directions and never meeting in the middle.
That's what I'm saying. Things don't fit right in the world around Dolores, or Mr. Mike either, in case you haven't noticed. The two of them look different to each person who sees them. And the thing is, nobody notices that either. Your Dolores is a spade chick, right?
And I nodded.
And so is Mr. Mike?
Yeah, I said, slowly getting up to speed and wishing to hell I could slam on the brakes.
Well, Skitch's Dolores was the girl you see in the picture, and Mr. Mike, he's like some plantation joker out of some bad movie. But he's a white man, I tell ya, and some of the other girls have seen different people even than that, and nobody notices. So spit it out. What's with you and your Dolores?
Ray demanded. Well, not a whole lot. That is until just a few days ago. I took a shine to Dolores right away, but didn't want to brush shoulders with anybody hooked up with Mr. Mike. I never knew she was his niece, but the day before we shut the show for the holidays, I ran into him at Vinny's, and before I knew it, she and I were dusting up the floor. And there was me, thinking it was a dream come true. But then...
Yeah, Johnny, what then? Give it to me. I want to hear all of it.
So then we ended up at her place, real swank pad on Fifth Avenue. Now what happened inside all night long was the usual affair, except that I started drifting off for a minute like some part of me didn't want to say what had really happened. Knowing I could never square it anyway, and if I did, he would just think I was loopy. Except that everything slid sideways, see? And I started hallucinating, it must have been. Some weird shit. But he cut me off.
That was no hallucinating. But go on.
I saw stuff. Stuff out of nightmares, and it looked like some of them were wearing Dolores' face. And sometimes she was wearing their faces. And one thing I know for sure, we weren't alone. I thought maybe she had slipped me a Mickey, but it wasn't like that. I was clear, Ray. You gotta believe me. We'd been drinking, but, well, not that much. I passed out, woke up the next morning, she was gone. And I was glad because I knew I was through with her. But I still had to get to the club. She was there, acting like it was all business as usual. Then today, just 2 days later, all the girls in the show were buzzing around about her and me being in the family way, but you and me both know it don't happen that fast. It was just that one time, you know? No, sir, doesn't happen that fast. I thought she might have been trying to fix me up with somebody else's kid, but that didn't feel right either. I got a touch of the juju sense myself, and it was firing off like the 4th of July. So what do we know? What the hell do we do? I asked, glad somebody else was in it.
Well, I know Skitch went up to some clinic in Poughkeepsie, and whatever he saw up there made him kill himself. Or made somebody else kill him to keep his mouth shut. So what do you think we should do, Johnny, old man?
He stared at me, waiting for me to state the obvious. So I did. We head up to Poughkeepsie, of course. You know exactly where the place is? I asked.
As it just so happens, I do. Skitch described it to me. It's one of those old rundown old mansions out in the woods with a long driveway. We can park somewhere and sneak in after dark. You got heat?
Course I do.
Then we're all set. For Skitch and for you, Johnny. Pulling your hiney out of the fire while you're still squirming.
We made our plans to head upstate the next day. And by all indications, it was going to be war. Poughkeepsie. Ray showed up the next morning in some old wreck of a jalopy that looked like he'd never make it all the way to Poughkeepsie.
Have some faith,
Ray replied when I spoke my mind.
This is my Auntie Macy's car, and she keeps it in tip-top condition. It's just old. Now let's hit the road,
he said, banging his fist on the driver's side door, and all I could do was jump in. It was a good 3-hour drive up to Poughkeepsie, and another half hour of driving around back roads before we found what passed for a hospital hidden in the woods outside of town. The place was one of those crumbling old mansions that swells of New York society built in the end of the last century, cast with names like Carnegie, Rockefeller, J.P. Morgan, and that Ford fella, the one who'd built this rust bucket that carried our asses up here, knock on wood, in one piece. This time of year, there wasn't a leaf in sight except on the ground, and the whole place was a sea of naked trees, so we couldn't get that close before dark without somebody spotting us. We ditched the car and crept from tree to tree as close as we dared get. The place was a massive stone facade, 3 stories and a top floor. We took in the scene from where we were hiding low on the ground, and I glanced at Ray. You see anything funny about this place?
Hell no. I ain't laughing, and this joint gives me the whim-whams. What do you see?
Well, if this place was some kind of normal hospital, and I'm not saying it is by a long shot on an old nag, the ground floor looks okay. Lights on, all that business. But the top 2 floors are all boarded up, and there's something else.
What's that?
Where's the cars?
Yeah, you're right.
Folks like this have cars, and how would they get way out here anyway? We need to get a closer look. I took up a position on the side of the building near the front, Ray bringing up the rear and watching our backs.
What are we doing now, Johnny? How long are we gonna stay like this?
Ray's voice was hushed and he had to choke out what he was saying. I want to see who comes out of there and who goes in, I replied, never taking my eyes off the looming hulk. Ray just nodded, and I could tell he was getting more and more spooked by the minute, and I hoped to hell he didn't bolt. We had been there maybe an hour. Nobody came and went. Then I got a plan. Ray, make your way around back. I'm gonna lay a little diversion, buy you some time. Go look for easy ways to get in, a basement maybe, or see if we could shimmy up to the upper floors. Get a look at the attic, I said, already heading for the front door of the hospital.
Well, lordy, ain't this place a peach?
I exclaimed, barreling through the front door like I owned the place, looking around, nodding and whistling.
This is a swank joint, all right, just like Cousin Frankie said it was.
Excuse me?
The woman in white at the front desk yelled in alarm as she jumped up and moved to give me the bum's rush, followed by a couple of burlies in white who I took to be orderlies.
You're not supposed to be in here.
They all barked at once.
Oh, it's okay. Yeah, see, I'm looking for the best land and place for the missus, and this looks to be the place.
I said, still gawking in wonder and playing the wide-eyed yokel.
And don't you worry none, ma'am. I can pay. Yes, sir, you bet I can,
I assured her, noting where the stairs were. It all looked to be in order, but that was about it. Nobody here but the woman and the two goons.
I'm sorry, we're not open to the public. This is a private hospital, by referral only. If your wife is in need of services, there are many other places for her. Or, get your own doctor to refer you to us.
She panted out, clearly in a real state because I had just wandered in.
Really, ma'am, my wife is soon to be in her way. Please, I said I can pay. Pay whatever you want. I'm a musician, see? With Fatty Arquette's outfit, and I get paid a pretty penny, don't you know?
I kept babbling, grinning and looking around. The goon squad collided with me and shoved me towards the door.
Please, this place would be just right for her laying in,
I cried, my arms haymaking as they hoisted me in the air and flung me out the front door.
Where's your car, buddy? One of them demanded.
Oh, just my bum luck. She ran out of gas down on the main road,
I said, still playing the dim bulb so they wouldn't get suspicious. All I hoped was that Ray had found something we could use to get inside this joint, cause one way or another, we were getting inside. I started meandering down the long driveway that led back to the highway, whistling and looking around like I was just taking in the sights in case anybody was watching to make sure I was headed back to the road. When I figured the coast was clear, I cut back into the woods towards the hospital, one tree at a time. It was past sundown and the lights on the ground floor were flickering out one by one, as if the place was shutting down. At least a part of it that covered as a front for whatever was really going on here. When I made my way around back, at first I didn't see Ray and was not of a mind to call out for him. I almost stumbled over his huddled form against the back wall. He grabbed me with his trembling hands like a hawk grabbing for its last meal. He pulled me down next to him and gasped out a few words.
No, no, not cut out for this, buddy. No, not me.
Ray, what is it? I whispered hard in his ear. Get a hold of yourself, man. What did you see? He was crying now, blinking back the tears and standing up, scrambling away from me like he didn't know who I was, but I pulled him back down. He was scared out of his mind like a kid about to get a licking. What is it? I demanded, gripping his arm and shaking him to his senses.
No, Johnny, no. Don't make me. You can't make me.
He winced, glancing up at the flank of boarded up windows. I guessed he had made his way up there, shimmied the drain pipe or something, and gotten a good look at what was inside.
I can't do this, man. I'm sorry. It's not who I am. Not cut out for this.
He stammered and then bolted out of my grasp and staggered into the night and disappeared. I hoped he'd make it back to the car and have the sense to wait for me and that nobody heard him stumbling around. So I was on my own. Well then, that was just the way I liked it. I pulled myself up onto the nearest windowsill and grasped the drain pipe and hoisted myself up. This had been my specialty as a tyke and I was glad I still had it in me. In no time I was up to the second floor. I jimmied one of the boards loose just enough to take a look-see and saw it was a huge open space, the whole floor. Through the gloom I could just make out it was filled with equipment, old beds, all kinds of stuff that was probably left over from the former occupants. Onward and upward, hopefully to pay dirt that made this whole escapade worth it, and shed some light on the weird hijinks with Dolores, and maybe even Mr. Mike thrown in for kicks. He and the dame were thick as thieves, and no way I saw clear he wasn't involved. And it still gave me the shivs to think of that night. And now she turned up in a family way. No way that was possible from any of my doing. At the third floor, it was easier to jimmy loose one of the boards off a window. When my eyes got used to the pale light that filled the room, I got an eyeful and almost fell off my perch. Again, the floor was just one big wide open space, but unlike the junk and clutter of the second floor, this one was laid out in rows of what looked like large see-through glass bathtubs, full of greenish water like you'd see at the bottom of some swimming pool abandoned and long gone wild. The water was cloudy and there were things floating in it. Couldn't make out what it was, though. But what was even crazier was there was a woman in each one of them, leaning against the slope back of the tub like they were asleep. Before long, a nurse came through, passing out little glasses of something to each one of them, and they tossed them off without a peep. Then they laid back and shut their eyes, all except one, who turned right at me and grinned. It was Dolores. Then she too just lay there soaking in whatever filled those tubs. That's when I noticed furtive movement in the green waters and figured Dolores moved her legs. But no, there was a frantic splashing around in the brackish stew that sloshed over the sides and clung to the tub's rim before dripping onto the floor in a gelatinous ooze. I gagged and almost turned away from the horrid scene, but quickly came to my senses when I saw something thrashing up against the side of the pool. It looked me dead in the eyes, then disappeared back into the greenish muck. Taking a closer look at all the other glass tubs, there was the same splashing around movement through the waters. I gagged again and couldn't stop the bile from drooling from between my lips. And the smell! Like seawater gone sour, and all of what should have been alive in it gone rotted. The thing's face was vile, a putrid grinning nightmare come to life. The same face I saw now in all the tubs, and the women smiling and paying no never mind like it was all the most normal thing in the world. But those faces! Small bumpy foreheads, big pulsing mouths like a cross between a fish and a toad, and those eyes, oh sweet mother, those goddamned eyes, big lidless eyes that never blinked. It was all I could do not to scream. But the things in the tanks were getting real agitated now, and soon a couple of nurses came along with none other than Mr. Mike and took the things out of the tanks, wrapped them up in blankets, and then carried them away like they were nothing but a bunch of ordinary tykes just coming to this world, proud as can be. On the chance that Dolores had blown the whistle on me, I shimmied back down the drain pipe as fast as I could and disappeared deeper into the woods where I planned to hightail it back to the highway and retrieve the car where I hoped Ray was waiting for me. I had seen enough to know this was some high juju that was outside my league. Then I heard a scream that came from the clinic, and I knew poor Ray hadn't made it back to the car. So I doubled back to see where he got to and if I could break him out. The ground floor of the place was dark and locked up tight as a drum, so I got my ass back up to the second floor on that drain pipe that promised to collapse on me sooner than later, but I had to try. And there was Ray, trussed up on a table in some kind of operating room. And what they were doing to him? Well, Ray was past needing any saving by me or anybody else. Those things from the tank were feeding on him like he was a bitch dog and they were his pups, like leeches. Only what they were feeding on was a whole lot darker than any mother's milk. The sounds of the slurping and the chewing, the splashing and the plopping onto the floor when they couldn't take down any more made me spill the contents of my lunch down my trousers. Then I jumped back down to the ground and ran like hell. I didn't get too far before my conscience got the better of me, and I had to turn back. I knew Ray was a goner, but I had to see what they were planning on next now that it was clear that they knew somebody was on to them. I hid in the trees where I could watch the front of the place, and pretty soon a flank of cars with their headlights off pulled up, and everybody flooded out of the hospital. Nurses, what looked like a couple of doctors, the bruisers, and some women all piled into the idling cars and took off. There was a big old ambulance too, where they loaded a bunch of bundles into the back of it that I knew were whatever they were calling babies. Then they all disappeared into the night, leaving just one car out front.
And there he was. It was Mr. Mike, all right. Tux in a top hat like he was about to parade through the doors of the Stork Club on New Year's Eve. He dragged some cans from around the side of the place and started tossing them through the windows of the old mansion. Then he disappeared inside for a few minutes. When he came out, he was running like the devil himself was on his ass. Then the windows of the top floor exploded, and a rain of broken glass and putrid water and slop came raining down, the slimy brackish ooze pouring over me. I had no time to worry about that, and I hoped that where I'd hid the car wasn't where anybody could see it, especially Mr. Mike. He knew I was onto it, sure he did, but I was hoping his desire to make a getaway was stronger than his desire to settle any scores he had with the likes of me. I thought briefly about the few bundles the nurses had made away with, and how many more of those things were still flopping around in those tubs upstairs when the place blew. They had been abandoned, and I wasn't quite sure how I felt about it, but figured it was a good thing they didn't make it out alive. Then I thought about Dolores. Had she been in one of those cars? I thought about her bundle and decided I didn't want to ponder about it too much. Whatever's made it out of Juju stays in Juju, and I wasn't about to think of it as any kin of mine. That was 5 years ago now. I never set foot back in New York after that, and have pretty much kept to the road. Some things, once you know them, there's no going back, not ever. And they sort of just set the stage for whatever comes after it. I hooked up with a couple of buddies of mine from back when I was a kid in New Orleans. Guys who knew stuff outside the normal, that weird shit. And we sort of formed a cabal of sorts, and they're teaching me things. We traveled the back roads and the quiet little towns along the coast people have mostly forgot about. Places all the new highways leave behind to grow dusty. Places where nobody ever moves to from anywhere else. That's where you'll find them mostly. They hide at first, but stick around for a day or two and you'll start to see them. Of that you can be damn sure. They don't like to be seen when strangers come around. Folks who've lost their way or can't find the road they're looking for. But then they'll come out eventually like nobody's business and big as life. They're easy to spot, too. That mottled skin. Those mouths just too damn big for their faces. Lips always pulsing. And those eyes. Those huge, lidless, unblinking goddamned eyes. That's the real giveaway for sure. That and the fact that they're always covered up head to toe in coats and hats, and even gloves on even the hottest summer days. Yeah, they're real easy to spot. And when we come across a nest of them, we put them down straight away, and then move on to the next. Do we get them all? Hell no. But they know we're on to them, and they're on their guard. As for Dolores and the other broads like her, and there has to be a lot of them who didn't look like anything out of the ordinary, I figured there was nothing we could do about them. As long as we took out as much of the spawn as we could, we figured we were doing the good work for somebody. We just followed the newspapers. Whenever we saw some young cat had committed suicide under strange circumstances, that's where we headed for, figuring that was as good a place as any to start looking. Most of the time, somewhere near there, some dusty little town or hamlet that looks like it hasn't seen a newspaper in better than 100 years, that's right where we usually find a nest of them. And then, well, we do whatever needs doing.
You've been listening to That Little Joint Down on West 34th by author Aaron Vleck. You know, I always wondered what they did up there in Poughkeepsie. Meanwhile, I think I've got one of those Juju folks living right next door. One of these days, I'm going to have to do something about that. Maybe I'll go cough on them. A little about the author. Aaron Vleck is a storyteller whose work focuses primarily on the trickster as bringer of delight and proponent of disquiet and humors. Many of her short stories delve into the original tales of the djinn and a universal imagining of the Native American coyote, Some works are historical in setting, while others hail from the contemporary and urban landscape. She indulges more and more in the reimagining of classic themes of Lovecraftian horror, and has a keen fondness for the occult detective. Erin is a graduate of Sarah Lawrence College, where she spent most of her time writing. Her work has appeared in many places around the net, including Ghastly Tales podcast, The Wicked Library, Nocturnal Transmissions, and Creeperoni. Excuse me. As well as in numerous anthologies. She was shortlisted for a Parsec Award and appeared on Ellen Datlow's recommended reading list a few years ago. If you're interested in some more Erin Vleck, you can visit her website at erinvleck.wordpress.com, where she's got a number of stories you can listen to, and even more at her podcast series, The Private Collector, which you can find on thewickedlibrary.com. Click on Seasons and scroll down to The Private Collector. Check it out, won't you? She's great. And thank you, Erin, for sending in the story. I really enjoyed performing it, even if I couldn't breathe at all the entire time. And while you're at it, please remember to stop by our Apple Podcast page or wherever else you listen to your favorite podcasts and subscribe. The charts are based on subscriptions, not listens, by the way. So feel free to accidentally subscribe as many times as you want. I won't tell anyone, I promise. And if you feel like spreading the word and helping old Drew Blood out and convincing a friend or two to subscribe to my podcast, that would help me out greatly, and I'd really appreciate it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all our other podcast episodes, visit simplyscarypodcast.com today and click the patrons link in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at chillingtalesfordarknights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 a month and get access to our entire audio archive dating back to 2012, including past episodes of this program and all our other shows, and hundreds of standalone releases, all of them ad-free and available to download or stream. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all our latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with us each and every week. You'll find me personally on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. Sometimes. And remember, we're accepting submissions. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on this show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment. Well, I'm afraid this is where we part ways, friend, at least till next week. So grab a drink for the road. Try a little of this fish tank cleaner. I heard it works wonders. I am a little sick this week with the COVID, so I appreciate your patience while I try to work my way through this shit. So may the wind be at your back, and may the road rise up to meet you. And if neither of those things happen, don't let it slow you down. Pull yourself up by the bootstraps and go fuck yourselves. Fuck. Good night, y'all.